Ah, the week that we have long awaited is finally here. Yes, indeed, spring has sprung. The azaleas are blooming, and Augusta National Golf Club is once again ready. I am Kelly Elbin, along with Bob Bubka. We are delighted to welcome you to a special 2025 Masters edition of Musings on Golf. Robert, we have much to discuss as the major championship season begins, and we're joined today by Corey Connors, who has finished in the top 10 three times in the Masters, and who will be one of those with dreams of donning that fabled green jacket come Sunday night. Bob, it's Masters week. Does it get any better than that?
I think it's the pinnacle of golf. It's the first major of the year. I mean, everybody's excited. The Masters is so different than any other event on the golf calendar, which makes it so extra special.
Extra special indeed. Bob, you've had the great honor, privilege, opportunity to cover, report on a lot of Masters through the years. Your Masters story, the Masters moment, what you think about that kind of stands out to you when you think about this special week at Augusta National?
You know what, Kelly? It goes back to the very first Masters I was set to cover, and that was back in 1986, believe it or not. And we were out to dinner with our broadcast crew a couple of days before the start of the Masters, and I said to a veteran, you know, I heard there's an opportunity for the media to play a round at Augusta National. He said, yeah, but you got to be in the top 25 to sign up. I said, well, I'll be there. He said, well, if you're going to be there, here's what you got to do. Come midnight, you got to be parked outside the gates and get in line, and hopefully you get in the top two or three, and you wait till 6 a.m. when they lower that gate, and then you start your engines, and you race down the parking lot, coming to a screeching halt to try and get in the top 25, and lo and behold, I make it into the top 25. I was so elated, so excited. And then obviously we know what that 86 Masters turned out to be, but I did make it into the top 25 my first time. What a thrill that was.
Oh, I bet it was indeed. And Jack winning it that year. Bob, let's talk about that for a second. Jack winning it in 86. He was, what, 46 years old? Was he I believe he was the oldest Masters winner at that time. What was that like, the emotions, the roars, the thrills on that Sunday afternoon?
Well, let's go back to the Thursday before, because I had yet spoken to Jack Nicklaus one-on-one, okay? I was relatively new in my career, and obviously Jack was Jack, and I decided, and primarily, I'll be candid with you, I was down there to really get preview stuff for the U.S. Open that was going to be coming to Shinnecock. My hometown, a big deal was being made, and my people, radio people, wanted some input from Jack Nicklaus on his thoughts. So stupidly, and I mean stupidly, I go up to Jack, and I said, Jack, you got a minute? He said, what do you need? I said, I'd like to get your thoughts on the U.S. Open coming to Shinnecock. He says, Shinnecock, I'm here to win the Masters. You want to talk about the U.S. Open? I said, gee, sorry, Jack. And that was my first encounter with the great Jack Nicklaus. And it's one I'll never, never, ever forget.
Yeah, and that that victory on Sunday is one for the books as well. He was a unique figure there, wasn't he, Bob? When you look at Jack, Arnold obviously before him, but Jack winning all those green jackets, boy, there was something about him and Sundays at Augusta.
Well, there was nothing like it. I mean, those roars that Sunday that Jack won his sixth green jacket, more than anybody else, were absolutely incredible, Kelly. I'd pay a ton of money to have Kelly Elbin standing alongside of me behind that 18th green, hearing to the adulation that I was hearing coming from that Masters crowd for their hero, Jack Nicklaus.
Let's talk for a second about Corey Connors, Bob. We talked to him last week. Three times he's finished in the top 10 of the Masters. He's played well this year. He's four top 10 finishes in events. He was third at the Arnold Palmer Invitational and then tied for sixth in the Players Championship consecutive weeks. Here's a young man who's represented his home country of Canada in both the President's Cup and the Olympics. I don't know that he's going to win, Bob, but I expect Corey Connors to play very well this week.
Well, you're right on the money, Kelly, and the primary reason you're so accurate, one of the primary criteria that you really need to win the Masters, you got to be a good putter, and there's mm-hmm. no getting around that, and Corey Connors certainly fits that bill. He's one of the best putters out there. Now, if you're one of the best putters out there, you have a reasonable chance to win the Masters.
Exactly. And you're going to really enjoy this interview with Corey. After the interview, Bob and I'll come back, talk a little bit, reflect on Brian Harman's win last week at the Valero Texas Open, preview the Masters a little bit more. But first, terrific interview that you're going to really enjoy with Corey Connors right after these messages from our great corporate partners, William and Harry and Titleist. Our friends at William & Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William & Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com.
Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are the best performing, most consistent in the game. So how does the best get better? You start by listening to the best players in the world. You experiment, iterate, validate. You trust the best process to create the best golf ball the game has ever known. The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. More speed off the tee, more control with your irons, more spin with your wedges, and more opportunity to shoot your lowest scores.
Well, Bob, as we count the days to the first ball being struck at the 2025 Masters, our special guest is preparing for his eighth appearance in the first major championship of the year. He has finished in the top 10 Augusta, and he has finished in the top 10. Let me start that again. Corey, how many top 10s have you had at the Masters? Is it three or four?
Three.
I'm sorry. Pardon
me. All back to back.
Yeah. 2021 and 22, right?
Yeah.
All right, sorry. I'm usually better at this. Bear with me. And 3, 2, 1. Well, Bob, as we count the days to the first ball being struck at the 2025 Masters, our special guest is preparing for his eighth appearance in the first major championship of the year. Three times he has finished in the top 10 at Augusta National, and he has also represented his country twice in the Olympic Games and several times more in the President's Cup. The pride of Listowel, Ontario, and via Kent State University, Corey Connors. Welcome to Musings on Golf. How you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks very much for having me. And yeah, it's an exciting, uh, exciting time in the golf world, but happy to join you guys and have a little chat.
We appreciate you having you on the air, Corey. I can't think of any guest that has come from a better sounding name than Listowel. I mean,
right.
That just brings a smile to my face. And I guess thinking about the Masters brings a smile to your face. What's the first thing you think about when it's Masters time?
Yeah, Masters time is a really special time of year. Obviously, first major championship of the season. Thinking about driving down Magnolia Lane, every time you step on property at Augusta National, it's really, really special. It's my eighth appearance. Feel like I have some good experience, but the feeling of driving down Magnolia Lane for the first time in the week and stepping foot on the grounds is really special and hard to put into words, but something that I look forward to and have been lucky enough to do a number of times now.
What's that like, the very first time? And you were an amateur, you were runner up in the 2014 USAM, and got an invite to the 2015 Masters. Corey, the first time you turn off of Washington Road and you're driving in, what the heck was that like?
Yeah, it was really crazy. A cool, experience to get to have as an amateur playing in Augusta. I was able to go and play the golf course a number of times prior to the tournament, the first being sort of in the late fall. As soon as I got my invitation, had some information on access to the golf course, and I was quick to call up the golf shop and see when I could get out there. And I hopped in the car from my hometown of Listowel, Ontario, with my dad actually, and we drove down, and I got a couple looks at the golf course. And first time driving in there, it's crazy. It's hard to put into words, but the beauty of the place, how magical it is. All the people are so amazing there, the staff, and it is a really cool feeling and something that I dreamed of as a young golfer, but to finally be driving into Augusta National was really special. And getting to compete in the Masters tournament for the first time was amazing. And kind of my first taste of being around star players in the world. Obviously grew up idolizing Mike Weir, another fellow Canadian, was able to play a few practice rounds with him, and I was actually paired with him the first Thursday Friday rounds. Was really, really neat and something really special. I remember from being paired with him, hit a really good first tee ball on Thursday, and I can assure you I was very nervous. There wasn't a lot of comfort there. But I hit a great drive down the fairway, and he kind of put his arm around me as we were walking off the tee and just said, great, great shot. Really remember that feeling. That was awesome. So that's kind of, stuck with me. And that's one shot that, I'll never forget, just teeing it up in my first Masters, and such a cool place. And the whole week was really memorable. I stayed in the Crow's Nest, which is, where they offer up to amateurs, and there's a small list of people that have been able to stay there, and being, staying right on property was really, really cool with some of the other amateur players. And, just waking up and, right outside the window is the first tee of Augusta National. You're pretty good view. Can't really beat that.
Hey, Corey, what surprised you the most about seeing Augusta for the first time?
I think like most people, just the undulation. Knew it was, known to be kind of a hilly golf course, but there's some crazy slopes. It's, I think you could put on a pair of skis and make it down the 10th fairway pretty quickly. And up into 18, you can barely see the flag stick. It's hard to get a feel for that when you're watching on TV like I did as a kid. Just think, that it's fairly open as well. That kind of surprised me. You can see a lot of holes from a lot of different places. And, it's just, they talk about it being in incredible condition. There's just not a blade of grass out of place, that held true. But I think overall the undulations there and sort of how severe some of the greens are and how uphill or downhill some of the approach shots are.
Hey, Corey, you said something interesting about being able to see so many holes. So my dad was a past president of the PGA of America, and he was on the rules committee for the Masters for about 25 years. And I went a couple times. He said, Kelly, without them knowing this was the first like stadium course in a sense, because you can, this was way before TPC, but it was never called a stadium course. But you're right, you can see a lot. You can see a lot just by sitting in one spot on certain parts of that golf course.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, once the patrons get out there for the tournament, it certainly fills in. But exactly like you said, there's some great spots you can sit and you can watch multiple holes. You know, what comes to mind, kind of seeing people hit into 15, you can see 16, you can see over to six. You know, depending on what side you're on, you can see 17th. But there's a number of spots there that's pretty cool. And you know, Amen Corner being famous set of holes, you can sit there and you can, you know, watch people play the 11th, 12th, you can watch them go down the 13th. So it's just a really magical place. But yeah, that was something, and especially when you're standing on the first tee, you can almost get a view of the whole property. You know, you're at a pretty, probably the highest point or one of the highest points on the property. And, you know, looking down over the golf course is pretty cool.
Every hole is difficult, Corey. And we certainly appreciate you taking time out to be with us as you prepare for the Masters. Just an incredible event. I can't call it a golf tournament. It's bigger than that. It's bigger than an event. It's just absolutely incredible. What's the toughest hole for you at Augusta?
A few come to mind right away. I think that, you know, number one is really underrated. It's a very difficult tee shot. I'd say for the most part, I'm really comfortable with a lot of tee balls at Augusta. I like to work the ball from right to left. Don't really hit many fades. But number one's a tricky tee ball for me. And if you're not in the fairway there, if you hit it left, you know, you're kind of scrambling. There's a giant bunker on the right side that catches, you know, some balls. I'm not long enough to carry it, certainly, with them, you know, can keep continually moving the tee further back. Number one, and another hole I haven't had much success on, which is the eighth, find that tee shot really tricky as well. Same sort of feel as the first. There's a big bunker on the right. You know, you don't want to hit it too far left, and you don't really have an angle for your second shot to go for the green. You know, the par fives there, you know, you were wanting to make birdies or give yourself looks for eagles. The eighth particularly, haven't been able to do a great job of that. So I'd say one and eight for me personally, find the tee balls tricky. And, you know, if you get it in play on those holes, they're not too bad. But, you know, if you're not, it poses a big challenge.
Hey, Corey, let me ask you this. To the average person, are those greens faster or slower than the average person would imagine?
They're pretty quick. I would say, you know, I'd say with the technology continuing to evolve, you know, some of the, you know, nice country clubs are around the country that can get the greens pretty fast. Augusta definitely is at another level, but, you know, they're playable. There's some big slopes on those greens. So, you know, you'd never be able to stop your ball if they were, you know, extremely fast. They're definitely some of the fastest greens we play, each season, but thinking back to some recent events that, you know, on the PGA Tour, Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill, they get the greens rolling, you know, comparable speed, TPC Sawgrass for the players, it's up there as well. So they're faster than most people would ever get to experience, but they're fun to putt on.
Is it hillier than you had anticipated that first time?
Yeah, most definitely. You know, there's tons of ups and downs, and you know, even the first hole, you walk way downhill off the tee shot, and then you're climbing up to the tee ball. You got to almost catch your breath before hitting your second shot into the first, and it doesn't really let up, you know, from there. So way more undulating, way hillier than I expected. And but when you're out there, you know, it's hard to not have a smile on your face. It's a special feeling to be inside those ropes, walking on, you know, such a historic golf course and playing in, you know, historic event. It's a cool feeling as being out there. So, you know, the hills aren't too bad.
Corey Connors joining us here on Musings on Golf. Let's talk about your game. You've had four top 10 finishes this year. You had a string of top 10 finishes at Augusta National, 20, 21, and 22. First of all, how do you feel like you're playing this year going into Masters Week? And then what were you doing well those three years that led you to those top 10 finishes at Augusta?
I feel like my game's in a good spot this year. I started the year with a top 10 in Hawaii. Started a little bit on the West Coast, but I felt like my game started rounding into form in the Florida swing. Had some good results. Didn't strike the ball as well as I wanted to or have in the past throughout the early part of the season, but kind of got that dialed in now, and feeling good with the ball striking. And I've had some good results with the putter as well, which is, always an area of my game that I'm wanting to improve. But I think, what served me well those three top 10s was the ball striking. Drove it well. And when you drive it well at Augusta, a lot of the approach shots, become easier. There's options to hit it really close to some of the holes using some of the slopes. There's little pockets in the greens if you're in control of your irons that you can use. And you can give yourself a lot of good looks. So I feel like my ball striking was really sharp, those top 10s, and, hopefully can keep hitting it well and give myself another shot this year.
All right, let's talk about growing up in Canada. We had your fellow countryman, your buddy Taylor Pendrith, joined us on Musings on Golf a few weeks ago. I know he played hockey, played some baseball. But for you as a kid, was hockey first and or whatever was first? When did golf come into play?
Yeah, avid hockey player, big hockey fan to this day. I would say, probably tied when I started. I was really young getting into golf and really young getting into hockey. It's hard to be a kid in Canada and not want to lace up a pair of skates when you're a kid and hop on the ice with your friends. So I was 4 or 5 years old, started playing hockey, and 4 or 5 years old, started playing golf as well. My dad was an avid golfer himself and introduced me to the game really young. I played hockey through my childhood and all through high school. Was the captain of our high school team for a few years, and played in for the local team in Listowel, Ontario with my buddies as well. Had a great time playing hockey. Loved the team aspect of it.
Were you a forward or defensive?
Yeah, I was forward. I switched to defense one of my last seasons. Coach wanted someone. I feel like I was a smart player. He wanted someone with some good hockey sense to play on defense. I was never really a scorer, just kind of, I don't know, an average forward, I guess, an average defenseman as well, but was smart with the puck and made good decisions. So it all worked out, but I had a lot of fun playing. The team aspect, like I said, of hockey was great, but I like the individual aspect of golf as well. And avid golfer, from a young age, started playing in tournaments when I was 9 or 10 years old. And it's kind of a never ending challenge to, perfect the game of golf. You're never going to do it, but you can always see ways to improve. And I enjoy the challenge of working on my game and trying to get better, trying to win events. And it's served I think that mind, the way my mind worked with golf, served me well.
If you had your choice of winning the Masters or winning the Canadian Open, which one would it be?
That's a tough one. I got to go with the Masters. I think, it's probably the biggest event in the world of golf. It's hard to not want to win the Canadian Open, which I certainly do. I'd take any of them. But the Masters is a really special event. Watching Mike win in 2003, I remember watching with my dad. I had to leave the room when he had a par putt on 18 to get into a playoff because I was so nervous. And, heard my dad cheering and knew he made it, and watching him win the playoff was something very, very special. And, how much that meant to golf in Canada, and, it was a, historic moment for the country. So being able to do something like that would be special, but Canadian Open is a close second there.
I bet it is. Oh, how about the US Open or the Canadian Open? If you had your choice, which one?
Well, I consider the Canadian Open the fifth major on the schedule. Sure. Being a Canadian and growing up watching that event and attending that event, but got to go with the U.S. Open there again. The major championships, they're on a pedestal of their own. You know, I've had success, you know, last year really for the first time at the US Open. I've had a few good finishes in the Canadian Open. Again, I'll take any win I can get, but the US Open would definitely be special.
Hey, Corey, real quick, like, did you ever have the opportunity to meet Mo Norman?
Yeah, this got a cool story about Mo as a junior golfer growing up in Listowel. I was just practicing one day at the local Listowel Golf Club, and there was a sort of a club pro event happening that day, and someone that Mo was close to was playing, so he was out at the golf course. At the time, I was 12 years old. I really didn't know much about Mo, you know, his history, and was just, you know, thought there was kind of a strange old man watching me hit balls and watching me chip and putt on the practice green. And I remember having, you know, one of those days where, you know, I'd throw a few balls down to hit a few pitches, and I'd make two or three of them, and, you know, then I'd roll some putts and just be rolling it in. So he definitely took notice, and we had a chat. He was looking at my golf clubs, and at the time I had Callaway Great Big Bertha driver that was a hand-me-down from my dad that he had just, you know, gotten cut down. Mo was asking me, you know, how I drive it, and I said, "Oh, pretty good." You know, I guess I'd figured out how to use that. But he took me out to his car, his white Cadillac that was parked in the parking lot. Opened up the trunk, and there was, you know, 1,000 golf balls and, you know, more clubs than you can count. And he gave me a driver that he had used, and had a senior flex shaft, you know, a little newer model head, and you know, thought that it would serve me well. And shortly after that moment, used it in sort of a national under 13 or 13 and under tournament in Canada, and was able to win. So I sent Mo a picture of me with the driver and the trophy, and wrote him a nice letter. And right around that time is when he passed. So, you know, not exactly sure if he was ever able to see it, but really cool memory. And, you know, growing up and getting older, I, you know, learn more about him and think about that moment being pretty cool for a young golfer. I just had one more. So I had to actually leave the golf course to go to swimming lessons. So my mom had picked me up, and, you know, on the way home or whatever it was, I was chatting with my dad and told him about what had happened. And he was playing golf later that day, so he went out and, you know, went up to Mo and told him, you know, "Thanks a lot, that was my son." And then Mo gave him a funny line about there being no money in swimming. He should be practicing golf. And, you know, and how Mo talked, and he's just saying, "Yeah, no money in swimming, no money in swimming." So that was a pretty cool memory that I have with Mo Norman.
Lovely stories. Ball striker, pure ball striker he was, Corey.
Yeah, I've just seen videos that, you know, he was, you know, getting a little bit older. I was never able to see him actually strike a ball, but, you know, after that moment, learned quite a bit about him, and I've watched a lot of videos. And he, and growing up, not too far away from him, you know, knowing some people who, you know, played with him when he was younger, and just some of the stories of, you know, how good he was is pretty remarkable.
We've talked a lot of Masters and Augusta National. I want to talk a little bit about the Olympics. You've competed for your country twice. Man, you were just two strokes out from medaling at the Tokyo Games in 20, tied for ninth at the Paris Games last year. How do you describe the feeling, Corey, particularly with golf having been, you know, away from the Olympics for so long, and now you've had the opportunity to represent your country in the Olympics? What in the world is that feeling like?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. You know, it's a proud moment getting to represent your country. I got to take in the opening ceremony in Paris this past summer, and for the Olympics, and, you know, being around some of the other athletes and watching the Olympics growing up, summer and winter, really, you know, surreal to be a part of that. But, you know, it's a pretty cool feeling putting on the Canadian shirt and the Canadian gear, and, you know, loading up the Canadian golf bag, and definitely something that I never really thought I'd get to experience as a golfer growing up. But man, it's pretty awesome, and it's something hopefully I'll get to do again. Keep working hard, and got a hopefully chance at a few more.
Well, you've had a chance to play a few of the Valero Texas Opens, and you've won twice there. Corey, talk about the first one. It was unique in terms of you being a Monday qualifier, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
First time it had happened in quite some time. Did you? What was it like? I mean, Monday qualifying is tough to begin with, right? Yeah, talk about Monday qualifying first, please.
Yeah, Monday qualifying is a grind. I was in a position where I had conditional status on the PGA Tour. My rookie season, I finished just outside the top 125. So I had conditional status, and I knew I was going to get, a number of events into a number of events with my status. So there was a little less pressure on me to Monday qualify. It was just kind of a bonus if it went in, and I think that really helped. I had a great record at Monday qualifiers. I had Monday prior that year at the Sony Open in Hawaii and finished third. And I already had another second place finish that season in an event that I got in. So, I was in a great spot on the FedEx Cup list that year. So again, kind of pressure off a little bit. I missed the cut the week before in the Dominican Republic, where I wouldn't have been able to make the Monday qualifier in San Antonio. So flew home from the Dominican, decided to get out to San Antonio. My clubs didn't arrive on the flight Sunday, so I drove around the golf course in a cart and just, didn't play it completely blind, but didn't get to hit any shots. Waited at the airport late Sunday night for my clubs to arrive on the baggage carousel, and made a 30-foot putt on 18 just to get into the playoff. Had probably 6 or 7 feet of break down the hill, so the stars aligned, and the playoff. I was in a playoff to, I think there was six of us for one spot.
Jeez.
Was able to birdie the first playoff hole, and no one else matched it. So was in the tournament. I remember talking with my caddy and coach after Monday qualifying, saying, "Hey, we're obviously doing things really, really well. It's not easy to Monday. Let's just keep, the same mindset." And I wasn't overly aggressive. And again, I made a double bogey on the second hole in the Monday qualifier. A lot of people do that. They kind of pack it in. I was got some resilience. I stuck with it, battled my way back, gave myself a chance. And it was kind of my mindset heading into the tournament. Got myself, into the mix. Had a really hot start to the front nine. Four birdies in the first five, followed it up with bogey the last four on the front nine, roller coaster round, and had six birdies on the back nine to win it.
Jesus.
So not not the most normal week for me, but special being a Monday qualifier. But I think, qualifying gave me confidence heading into the event, knowing my game was in a good place. And the rest is history.
So with that confidence, when you teed it up on Thursday morning, you likely were thinking way beyond, hey, let's just make the cut, right?
Yeah, I wanted to give myself a chance, and like I said before, I'd had some good finishes, in that season, up to that point. So, yeah, let's, trust the game and see where we can take it. But a lot changed that week. Winning, getting into the Masters. I remember having just a carry-on bag. I packed just a handful of shirts and a couple pairs of pants, and next thing I'm in Augusta, and my wife and I ran into the store to go shopping to buy some clothes. And it was a pretty whirlwind experience, but something that was really cool.
Well, we're on our closing holes with Corey Connors here on Musings on Golf. Okay, so I have to ask you, the Copperhead course is, at Innisbrook is hard. And we saw some guys really struggling, and your fellow countryman, Adam Hadwin. And I know we've all slammed a club, right? But when he slammed that club, the sprinkler system set off. I have to imagine you and McKenzie and Taylor, you have to have had some fun with him since.
Well, he's a guy you don't want to poke him too hard. I think he was a little embarrassed when that happened. He's a fiery competitor. He's a great friend, and he's a great player. So it was definitely the talk of the tour throughout the weekend in Tampa. But haven't seen him since it happened. I'm sure we'll needle him a little bit when that happens. But he yeah, it's I was in it was interesting. I didn't know it was him at first. I was on the 17th hole there, which, the sprinkler he set off was near the 10th green. And I was on 17 and started getting wet. And I was like, that seems really weird. And looking up, there's not a cloud in the sky. I'm like, gee, there's like misty rain happening. And then 18T, same thing. And I'm looking around like, this is really weird. And as soon as we walked off 18T, you could see the sprinkler going nuts. And there was a spectator there holding it like he was, but it was still going. I don't know how far along he was. But, I think sometimes they turn off the sprinkler systems to make sure that doesn't happen. But I didn't really think that one was in play, but I guess he struggled a little bit up the 10th, and kind of a funny thing that hopefully he can laugh about eventually.
It happens out there, doesn't it? I mean, right? Golf's tough.
Yeah,
man.
I mean, it's a tough job. As much as I love playing, it's not always easy. It can be stressful when things aren't going your way. It's a grueling game. There's a lot of ups and downs, a lot of emotion, and you know, we're all fiery competitors. So sometimes you just lose it a little bit.
Hey, two final questions for me, Corey Connors. Love the story about Mo Norman. I want to ask you, I was reading on golfweek.com. I know that each contestant at the Masters is able to purchase what, 6 or 8 tickets, something like that, for the week. And Herb Page, the longtime golf coach at Kent State, sounded like when you gave Coach Page a ticket to get into the Masters, it really meant a lot to him. And I'm wondering, it's kind of been a pipeline. I know Herb is Canadian. I know it's kind of been that pipeline from Canada to Kent State for a number of you guys. What's he meant to you, not only as a person, but as a coach, but as a person?
Yeah, it's special to, you know, have a relationship with Herb, and, you know, to have had him as a coach at Kent State. You know, he was one of the first coaches to recruit me, and I was really excited to go and play for him. He is a great man. He taught not just me, but all his players so much on and off the golf course, just being, you know, great people, being organized in life and organized on the course. And he's really competitive. You know, he brought out the, you know, competitive spirit in the players, and he's so proud of us, you know, his teammates with Mackenzie Hughes and Taylor Pendrith there. And, you know, the three of us being on tour now, he was able to watch the three of us at the President's Cup in Montreal. And it's amazing what he's, you know, done for us and how much he means to all of us. And, you know, he's our biggest fan and struggling with some health issues right now. So he's definitely a fighter, and we're all cheering him on, but he's always following. And I look forward to getting, more opportunities to have him, watching us.
It's what the best coaches do, right, Corey? They're not just, it's not just those 3 or 4 years that he has you under his tutelage. It's the lifetime, the things he leaves behind with you, right?
Yeah, for sure. He taught us so much, and, I'll never forget my experience playing for him, being around him, you know, like I said, on and off the golf course. But he's a great man, and very lucky to have been able to play with him, play for him.
All right, final question, Corey Connors, you've been terrific on this. It's a question I get to ask at the end of each of our interviews. If you could have 3 people, whether living or deceased, to play kind of a dream round with, right? Magical foursome, you being the 4th, who would those 3 be, and where would you play?
I throw my dad in there, the one who introduced me to the game. He's one of my biggest fans, so loved him to join. I think Arnold Palmer, I never got a chance to meet Mr. Palmer, one of the greats of the game. And then I think Jack Nicklaus, could pick their brains. You know, I've got to spend a little bit of time with Jack, living in Jupiter, Florida now, and playing at the Bears Club.
Right.
Jack was an incredible competitor, but an incredible father. And I think, try and pick their brains on, something that they thought gave them an edge against their competition, obviously, to legends of the game.
And where would you play? And how much fun would your dad have playing with those two, by the way?
Yeah, he'd probably have a good time. I think he might be a little nervous, though. I don't know. But he'd have a blast. Yeah, honestly, I think just the course I grew up on would be really special.
Where's that?
Yeah, it's a place, Listowel Golf Club in Listowel, Ontario.
Yeah,
I get to spend a little bit of time back there in the summers now with my wife and kids, which is really special. But you know, where I learned the game, where I honed my craft, and it'll always be one of my favorite spots to be.
Corey Connor, it's been a real favorite for us to have you with us here on Musings on Golf. Wishing you all the best in your eighth appearance at the Masters. Hoping for your fourth top 10. And how would a green jacket feel to be put around? That would be okay on Sunday in Butler Cabin, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I certainly would. I'd certainly take that. That'd be quite special. But yeah, try and get myself in the mix, and hopefully have a shot on Sunday.
Corey, thanks so much. All the best.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry, and you should too. Folks, I love these golf shoes. They're made of deer skin and calf skin. They've got a soft gel insert, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And I got to tell you, they are so incredibly comfortable. So head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best, play your best with William & Harry. Bob, you mentioned about Corey being a terrific putter, and obviously to be successful, to have any kind of opportunity to win at the Masters, you have to be a good putter. Corey also strikes me as kind of a level-headed guy. He's played in enough of these now. I think this will be his eighth Masters appearance. He knows how to play the golf course well. Again, I don't think he's going to win, but he has all the attributes of someone who can be there come Sunday.
Yeah, and you need that going in. And I was just thinking for a minute, boy, what a thrill. What a thrill it would be to be wearing a pair of William and Harry walking down the first hole at Augusta National. That's a combination that's very tough to beat.
Great plug for our sponsor, William and Harry. I do have a new pair of their ostrich shoes, by the way. Unbelievably comfortable and terrific performance. And they helped me finish. My partner finished third in our net division over the weekend at East Point Country Club. So moving on up with William and Harry. Hey, Bob, Masters. I guess sort of the 2025 version sort of starts with Scottie Scheffler and kind of ends with Rory McIlroy in a way. If any champion in Scheffler, trying to become the first to go back-to-back since Tiger did it in 01 and 02. Rory talking about trying to silence all the outside noise in his press conference today. 0-38 in his last 38 major championship tries. His 11th effort to try to become the sixth to win all four of the major championships. What do you think of those two? Give me your thoughts on those two up front.
Well, it's hard to explain why Rory has gone this long. I mean, you know, you look on paper, you say he's going to win every week. I mean, he hits it further. He's a great iron player. He's fixed his putting. What more do you need? But yeah, there's an intangible down at Augusta. I mean, you could play lights out. You might be able to shoot 64 days in a row, and one day another player shoots 63 days and 59 the fourth day, and you don't get to win. You play the Masters of your life, and you don't get to win. There's so many variables, and it makes the prize so great. That's why everybody wants the ability to slip on that green jacket.
But Scheffler, he's won, what, Bob, two of the last three Masters. He got the season off to a little bit of a rusty start because he cut his hand in an accident on Christmas Day, but he's playing well. Do you see him winning?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, not seeing, you know, Scotty winning is like seeing Kelly Elbin not able to finish third net in his golf tournament.
You got me, baby. You got me. Somebody who is coming in hot is Brian Harman. Nice victory for him at the Valero Texas Open. Let's hear what the lefty had to say about the victory heading in to Masters Week.
I've been playing some really good golf. My scores haven't showed it, but I've been feeling like it was right there. So to have it pop this week and be in good form, you know, for some big stuff coming up is really awesome. You know, having a little bit of experience and knowing that score was kind of a relative thing today, it was more, you know, kind of a game of attrition. You know, the conditions just wouldn't allow for a super low score. So you know, I didn't have my best stuff today, but good enough to make a few putts and a couple birdies on the back nine helped a lot.
Well, that's what one of the real keys is, Kelly. When you play Augusta, you got to adapt to what it's willing to give you. You can't go in there taking. You go in there begging, hoping that, you know, you get the right bounce, the right putt. I mean, there's so many variables. The prize is so big. You get invited back the rest of your life. Are you kidding me? What an event to win. And that's why the whole world will be focused on the Masters this week.
So interesting a few weeks ago, Bob, when we had Dr. Bob Rotella on speaking to exactly what you're saying. It's a hard week. 72 holes of a ridiculously demanding golf course. And things are going to go against you, meaning a player in the field at times, more often than once. How do you deal with that, Bob? How resilient are you to be able to offset those moments that will happen?
Well, dealing with the unknown is dealing with the Masters, because nobody knows what's going to happen when they get to that first tee for their first round in the Masters. They may get every good break in the world. They may get every bad break in the world. But you got to deal with it. If you want to put on a green jacket, you got to deal with it.
Yeah, you know, someone who's dealt with it with such class over the years will make his 41st and final Masters appearance. Bernhard Langer, what a champion this guy is, Bob. We had Bernhard on last year. After not too long after he tore his Achilles playing pickleball, and what should have been his last Masters appearance in 2024, he pushed it back a year. I'm going to miss that guy in the Masters. Yeah, he'll continue to play on the PGA Tour Champions and at 67 probably win again. But to me, he's just as good an individual, Bob, as I've ever met among players playing tournament golf, whether on the regular tour or the season.
I never thought I'd say it, but the Masters is extremely, extremely unique. Bernhard Langer might even be more unique. What an individual. I mean, and the beauty of it, Kelly, what I really like about Bernhard, he's good for golf. He's a good person. He's a good family man. And he's a great ambassador. And we are very lucky to have him as one of the leaders of our sport.
That's the word, Bob, ambassador. I agree with that. And I know for him tonight, as we record this on Tuesday of Masters Week, when they have the champions dinner, I'm sure he's going to be recognized. I'm sure it will be an emotional week for him. But he'll continue to come back. And that's the great thing, to come back for the dinners, come back to be honored at Augusta National. On the flip side, you know, we had an interview with Noah Kent, the collegiate player, and his dad, David, at Thanksgiving. And Noah, the runner-up in the U.S. Amateur last year, will be making his Masters debut as an amateur at the Masters. It's what Bobby Jones always had in mind with his event, Bob, right? The amateurs must be an integral part of the Masters. And we wish Noah Kent, now at the University of Florida, all the best as he tees it up.
Yeah, certainly. Quite an honor just to get to tee it up, and I hope he plays very well.
I do too. Okay, we're going to make our picks here real quick. I'm going to go a little different here. I'm going to go with a guy who was tied for third in 2024, a guy who's one of the really great ball strikers in Colin Morikawa. He's my pick to win the Masters in 25. And you, Robert?
I'm going to go with Sepp Straka. Of course, I'm a little bit biased. The high school that his caddy went to, we shared that high school and happened to be good friends with him. And I think Sepp has got the right talent, the right form right now, and he's my outside pick.
Elbin takes Murakawa, Bupka takes Straka. And next week, Adam Shupak from Golf Week will join us to recap what's going to be a riveting, exciting 4 days at the Masters. For the one and only Bob Bupka, he'll be on all this week on TalkSport in the UK, updating. Kelly Elbin signing off. Enjoy the Masters. Thanks for joining Musings on Golf.